Today on The Grave Talks, we continue our conversation about The Cabin on 360 with Dennis Estlock and Ryan Jones. Now, because we've talked about the woods, the history of the land itself is pretty horrific too, because there was some Civil War battles right there.
Yes.
On the land or very near the land.
On
the land.
There were numerous crossings on that land. Looking at maps, there were, you know, 5 to 8 companies either side, depending on the day that you look at, as to who held that property on what date. It was battled over very heavily, because we are 0.2 mile from the next main intersection, and that was to what is modern day 360, was a main thoroughfare into Richmond, and the Confederates were told to hold that intersection at all costs. Just across the road, maybe 1,000 yards from our property, are the remnants of Bethesda Church, the foundation of anyway, and that was a Confederate headquarters. And then 1.25 miles, maybe 1.5 miles to our northeast was the Villa House, and that was a Union headquarters. So we are literally right between them as the cannonball flies.
And there was a lot. I mean, obviously, with them situated so closely together, there was a lot of death on that land.
From everything that I have researched and the battles that we can tie to that area. Now, I can't find an exact map that says on this plot of land, but with the battles that took place right around us, we've come up with 2,264 men were killed, captured, wounded, or missing in action within 1 mile or so of the property.
Do you think that might be why the property is so active?
That's been a thought. I mean, one of the theories in the field is that man's atrocity to man can open a wormhole or open a thread that breaks that veil and can bring forth evil. So, I mean, that's a possibility. Is that what happened? I don't know. I think, honestly, the entity that is there, I think, has been there long before the Civil War. So back into the mid-1600s, settlers were coming up into that area. I don't know how far it is from there to like Henricus, which was the second successful settlement. But the settlers in 1611 were at Henricus Point, and then they were moving north and northeast, and that takes them right up towards that Mechanicsville area where we're located. So by the 1630s, they were up there. What did the natives, you know, is it possible that the natives put a curse on the land when they were pushed off the land? Sure, it's possible. Is it possible that the natives had already conjured something that we modern day call a Pukwudgie or an elemental spirit? That's certainly possible as well. So we don't know. Unfortunately, a lot of the records for that area were burned in the Hanover Courthouse during the Civil War. So we don't have a lot of those records from that back then.
Do you feel that the activity is different in the rancher versus the cabin versus the woods? Do you feel like there's some crossover? This feels familiar, or is it all pretty separate?
Go ahead, Ryan.
Well, the cabin is where we have our events, our get-togethers. So the activity is more light. It's not as heavy, not as dark, but there's still stuff that happens in the cabin. And there has been some dark stuff that's happened in the cabin, but just the atmosphere itself is more of a conducive to camaraderie, having a good time, stuff like that. Once you leave the cabin, you go to the woods, and that's more historical, like Civil War, cannon fire, musket fire, shadow figures, weird lights, even some Native American spirits on the land as well. And then, of course, you go into the Brick Rancher, and there's, of course, the darker spirits in there. As far as crossing over, I don't know for sure. There are spirits all over the property. It's not just the woods. You can go in the front yard and get an EVP. So it's not just relegated to the woods and the houses. It's everywhere on the property. If you're there at the right time, you can catch something. I've caught a recording of a little girl, and I'm walking, trying to get in the front door of the Brick Rancher. And I'm like, I put my key in, and you hear a little girl saying, as I'm putting the key in the front door.
And we had that little girl say hello right between you and I when I used the wrong key.
Yeah. Wow. We've had the door to the Brick Rancher locked by itself. I remember we had it where it was me, Dennis, and our friend, I think Carissa.
Carissa.
Yeah. And I was going to go outside to go out to do something. And actually, it was you. You go outside to smoke a cigarette, and you're like, why'd you lock the deadbolt? I'm like, why would I lock the deadbolt? The deadbolt was locked. I know I didn't lock it. And Chris didn't lock it because, you know.
And they don't lock themselves.
No, I mean, not usually.
Yeah, not but, typical.
Yeah. Self-locking deadbolts, is that a thing?
Wow.
Yeah, it's been activity. You know, they ask what's the most common thing that happens. And the only answer I can give is something.
I mean, just after this conversation, there's so much activity. And, you know, it's interesting. When I was reading some reviews, everybody's commenting on how much activity there was. And
we had a group come out to investigate. It was Beyond the Badge Paranormal. They came out in, I think, February to investigate the property. And we had them on the show after they went out there. And the leader of the group was like, when we booked this location, we thought it was just going to be a filler investigation. Because they had investigated in St. Albans, which is a sanatorium in Radford, Virginia. And they were going to book Sweet Spring Sanatorium, which is in West Virginia. And they're like, okay, well, we have some new team members. We'll go here to kind of get their feet wet for the bigger investigations, the real investigations we're going to be doing. And he said, brother, I'll tell you what, this location is the most active location we have been to.
Yeah, they didn't just get their feet wet. They damn near drowned.
Oh. No, yeah, exactly. We've had teams.
I could see that being a lot for a team.
Don't judge a book by its cover when it comes to the cabin on 360. Because personally, for me too, I'm always like, oh my God, I can't believe this place has so much activity because it's so nondescript. Doesn't look like a castle. It's not a prison. It's not
it's not an old field hospital. It's just these two cabin and ranch little places.
That's what's so interesting about it, because when I did see pictures of the cabin, I was like, that's haunted?
What?
You know, there's paranormal activity here, because it looks like a really nice place you would go stay and rent out for the weekend. So that really interested me. And I saw a picture of the ranch house, same thing. You wouldn't look at, you know how some places you go by and you're like, that's a haunted place. Other places, it just goes to show you can happen anywhere.
I'm sure there are other houses, you know, that have murders in them, but it's like when it happens and then it kind of goes on and then it gets forgotten, but it's livable after a little bit. You know, people move in, they add their own kind of familiar style to a house, and it becomes more of a home. I don't see how anybody could live in that house Just the way, just the way it feels. And there have been businesses there have tried to make it in the house, but they don't last longer than maybe 5 years. Yeah. And that's probably the longest.
It was Randy in prison somewhere in that area.
Was he? Yes.
Is he still alive?
He is still alive. He is out of prison. He was paroled in May of 2019. Our then governor did a huge parole list, and Randy managed to win the lottery and was released.
It would be interesting to talk to him.
We had one of the gentlemen that has come out to the cabin on numerous occasions that actually did track down Randy's phone number, called and spoke to Randy, which is how I can tell you that Randy's statement was, even though I stand here a guilty man, I wasn't there that day. That house should have been burned down a long effing time ago. But so in his Department of Corrections intake interview, he stated that he had woke up that morning, did a couple of lines of cocaine, barged into her room to tell her to get ready to go to school. A fight broke out, and then he woke up sometime later on the floor with a pistol beside him, seeing her body on the floor across the room from him. I have issue with that story because you're talking country, very rural area in 1979. There's conflicting reports on, depending on which document I look at, like the sexual offenders list that he's registered on for life lists him as Indian. I'm assuming not Native Indian, but other. But his original prison intake form, Department of Justice form, shows him as a black male. So I'm not certain what his race or nationality is. And I don't think at this point it plays zero bearing in this. But I think for him to have gotten a hold of cocaine as a 17-year-old minority in 1979 in country, Mechanicsville, Virginia, would have been very difficult. So I find flaws in his story.
And it's 17 to even have the money to somehow get it unless, you know, he's selling it.
Right. I was alive in 79, and I was in a small rural area in Northwest Ohio, and cocaine, you know, I was only 10, but cocaine didn't seem to be a very huge commodity. I could be wrong, but I find flaws in this story.
You know, and maybe for him too, it's convenient to say, I don't remember it. I just woke up like that because it's too horrific. Maybe he can't deal with it.
Yeah, it is said that our mind will lapse memory to protect oneself from thoughts. So maybe that's what he's doing. He's trying to, you know, picture something else as a alternate reality for what actually took place.
Now,
I don't know.
How long have you guys been investigating there at the cabin in the ranch house in the woods?
We started back in 2016, about around this time, maybe June of 2016 was when we first started going out there, just us. Then slowly, you know, we would investigate like all the time out there, and then we would invite other teams of some of our friends to come out and investigate with us. And then through time, when we realized that, hey, they're getting stuff too, it's not just us, and these other teams are getting a lot of stuff, and they're recommending this place and telling us this place is really, really haunted, that's when we decided that, hey, you know, maybe we can use this location, this property, for some good. And maybe we can open it up to the public and start holding public investigations to raise money for causes that we find worthy. So you will have, like, there's a young lady who is dying of of cancer. So we'd have an event for her family to raise money for her family, or we'd have an event for, again, the Toys for Tots event. We just had an event last April for my daughter's friend who had breast cancer. We did an event to raise money for her, because we know that we're lucky to be able to investigate or mm-hmm. be able to have this property. And we wanted to give back to the community and also educate them on the paranormal and give them a chance to investigate and not charge an arm and a leg to come out and enjoy an evening hunting ghosts. So we try to keep our prices at a reasonable rate where you can go out for an evening and not feeling like you need to take out a loan from the bank to come out and join us on an investigation.
Since you've been investigating for a number of years now at the same location, has your view of the paranormal been changed, maybe more informed? Maybe it's given you some things to think about you hadn't before your first time out there? Because I'm fascinated too by you guys using it kind of as a paranormal lab. So I was just wondering if there's any way, so I'll start with you, Dennis, if there's any ways that you have kind of changed your outlook on it, or it's made you look at things differently?
I do look at locations differently, most definitely. It taught me that, you know, like Ryan said just a little bit ago, don't judge a book by its mm-hmm. cover. If they say, hey, let's go out to this old mill house. Well, if I don't know the history on that mill house, I'm going to be a little more cautious in what I do and how I present myself to that location, because I don't want what's there to be malevolent and then I have a huge negative interaction. You know, I work with Haunted Nights paranormal events. So I go to a lot of locations with them and I help guide the public, or I help the public do their investigation on a rotation for Haunted Nights. And it's taught me to kind of watch those people a little closer that I, you know, normally it wouldn't be, I'm watching the guest as much as I do now, because I see what can happen when it's least expected.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Have you changed kind of your outlook on things, Ryan, since you've been involved with the investigations there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I've grown as far as an investigator, mm-hmm. but that's something you kind of do when you've been doing it for so many times, because you learn new ways to do things and you grow a new respect for the spirits that are in the house, and you learn to open yourself up more and trust yourself, trust your intuition when you go into an investigation. You feel off, listen to that voice in your head, because it knows what it's talking about. And you know, if you sense something that's wrong, you know, you can either leave or do whatever you need to do to protect yourself.
You know, I have talked to people who own a haunted location, or they kind of run it for someone else and do investigations there. So they spend a lot of time in that one location. And a lot of times they kind of feel like they get to know a spirit, and they get to know, and sometimes it changes. Sometimes the energy is one thing, the next day it's a totally different thing. Like one day it seems to be happy they're there, the next day it doesn't want them in the house. Do you guys kind of feel like you've made any connections with any of the spirits there? Do you even feel like you're kind of experiencing the same spirits, or does it feel different? Or is it even a day-to-day thing?
For me, they feel like family.
Hmm.
Feel like we're in a paranormal sense. It's, you know, not like actual family. But when you go someplace for so long and you're spending like, you know, obviously every day, because I'm out there every day, but I'm good. I'm there a good amount of time. The houses, it's themselves, even the brick rancher, they feel like they're part. They feel like they're a part of me.
That makes sense to me. And, when you spend that kind of time there. And Dennis, do you feel kind of, I would imagine in the rancher, there's kind of this level of respect, maybe, yet caution. I don't know how I'd feel about going back in there. You're much braver than I am.
So there's, I know of at least three different entities in the Brick Rancher. One, Ryan got to see how I reacted with. It was an older man that's probably 6'3". He stepped up at me and scared the ever-loving snot out of me. I stepped through a doorway and all of a sudden he charged me and stopped right in my face and blacked out my vision. It just went black in front of me, scared the hell out of me. So he and I don't interact much anymore because I threatened him with my saints. The night that I got the EVP of Melissa saying, "I'm with you," I literally, in front of the group of 10 people, I played it back 3 times to verify I heard what I thought I heard, let them hear it. And then I laid the recorder down, and I excused myself, and I went outside and cried. The level of attachment that you develop to spirit when you interact so many times, you begin to feel some of their emotions. You begin to learn who they were in their life, it does develop a connection to them. So you can end up, you know, I won't say I'm heartbroken over her death because I didn't know her on that level, but it does cause me to feel some heartbreak and some pain for her family and for the loss of such what has presented to be a beautiful young girl.
And she was innocent. You know, she didn't do anything to bring that upon herself.
Yeah, just a 7th grade student, 12-year-old little girl.
And even if she didn't want to go to school that day, she's 7th grade. That's what they do. Or 6th grade, you know. We were all that same kid.
Well, and that's one of the odd parts. We've had, I think, 3 of her classmates have been out to talk to us. And we met one young lady, her name's Sandra, and she was supposed to spend that Friday night as a sleepover at Melissa's house. She says they were very close friends. And her school is within eyesight of the cabin and the rancher. And Sandra said that they could see the police activity and the police tape at the house. And the simple fact, even before they saw that, Melissa wasn't at school that day, they knew something was wrong because this child did not miss school.
When someone does go there to do an investigation, do you kind of pick, they're going to do the rancher, the cabin, the woods? Do they do all of it? Because it seems like in one night, that would be too overwhelming.
Well, if it's a team that's renting the location for the night, we don't control what they do.
True.
We give them full run of all 3 areas. For our public investigations, when we do, you know, a cancer fundraiser or the toy drive or whatever it is that we're doing, we have our standard rotation, and we'll do one rotation through the log cabin, one rotation through the brick rancher, and typically 3 rotations in different areas of the woods. And they seem to have different activity in the different areas of the woods. Why, I'm not totally certain, but it does seem to vary from time to time as to what area you're at, as to what you get happen in the woods. But yeah, they, you know, even the public events, they get to experience all 3 areas.
Which I think would be overwhelming.
Well, you're only in them for maybe 45 minutes. Our rotations are an hour long. You know, you can't do such a huge place and you can't spend, you know, 2 hours in every area, and you're, you know, 10 hours in. And, you know, for the guides, my team is usually guides or the other teams that help us. You know, Fredericksburg Paranormal Researchers comes down and helps a lot. Pandora's Peregrine Nation. I can't ask those folks that are kind enough to come help us to spend 10, 12 hours working mm-hmm. with guests all night.
Yeah.
So you do, you know, we typically do 7 a.m. or 7 p.m. to about 1 a.m. You know, with breaks in between, then you get the chance to have all five areas for about an hour apiece. So it's not so overwhelming. If you spent too much time in either area, I think it could become overwhelming.
You know, one thing I read consistently in the reviews, because I read quite a few of them, was how great you guys are as hosts. Everybody said that. No, they really did. They said the nicest things, and that you guys are very informative and shared a lot of the history of the location and the land and the Civil War stuff. And I think that's really awesome. So, because normally, you know, people anymore, when they write reviews, they nitpick stuff.
Oh, they're brutal.
I know. Which is why I don't ever read comments. I'm always like, if you got something negative to say, just message me. I'll read it that way.
Yeah,
and people never
and we
do
encourage
it like
them. We encourage them. You know, no matter what you have to say, please put it on there. You know, if it's a negative thought, negative comment, negative, just go for it. You know, it's only going to help us improve what right. we do in the future. So I don't care if they want to leave a negative, and if we've done something wrong that deserves a negative, go for it. But for the most part, we've developed some really good friendships just because of the cabin, and we attribute that to Melissa. Ryan and I have said numerous times that we've made really good friends over the years because of this young lady's story. And because of her tragedy, we have had wonderful friendships and that have become like family bond, that we wouldn't have known each other if it hadn't been for the mm-hmm. fact that we knew there was a death in that property and it turned out to be this young lady.
I say I met my girlfriend there.
Yeah.
At the cabin, and now I have a six-year-old son.
Oh.
That's how Angie actually contacted me, was because she knew that I was associated with the cabin, and she had been having dreams about the cabin, and she asked if she could meet me out there. And she's like, "You don't even have to be there. It's need to walk. I just want to walk the grounds." So I'm like, "Well, I'll meet you out there." So we met out there, and we've been together ever since. And she said that she was actually there when the cabin was a salon. She had a spa day that her ex-husband gave to her after her daughter was born. So she went out there, and the cabin was a nail salon and hair salon and hair and nail spa. And the back room on the first floor was where they had the nail salon. And she said she was in there, you know, getting her nails done. She looked out the side door facing the side window, I mean, facing the brick rancher. And she said she saw two shadow figures walking across, or two dark figures walking across the lawn. One was tall and the other was short, like a little kid. And they walked across the yard. And she said that she had put that out of her mind until she started talking to me and realized that, hey, this guy, you know, this guy has connection to the cabin. I want to go back there and face what I saw that one day.
That's an interesting story to me, because what drew her to the cabin drew her to you.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like that was always meant to happen.
Like I said before, we were meant to be there.
Yeah.
That dream happened it was not an accident that we were there when it happened.
Right. Now, a little bit ago, Ryan, you mentioned on the show, and you have a podcast.
Yes, ma'am.
And what's the name of that podcast, and how can people give it a listen?
The podcast is called The Freaking Awesome Paranormal Show. We stream live every Tuesday night from 9 to 10 p.m. Me and my co-hosts, Rhonda and Sarah, we have, it's all paranormal talk. We have groups come on from all over the country, and we talk about pretty much anything under the sun that has to do with the paranormal. We're also on YouTube as well and Spotify.
And if someone is interested in coming out to do an investigation, is the best place to find information on the Facebook page?
Yes.
Okay, so just search Cabin on 360. And yes, there's contact information there. I think your phone number's there. You can message him there. Yeah, that's how I did it. I just messaged you through Facebook.
That's the best way to get in touch with us.
Well, this has been such an interesting conversation, because when I first came across the location, I'm thinking we're going to talk just about the cabin. But the more I dove into it, I'm like, oh, my God, this is way bigger than what I thought it was. So it was really, really interesting. So, Dennis and Ryan, thank you so much for giving me your time tonight. I really appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. Appreciate it. If you want to know about the other parts of the location, we'll do another show.
Because there are stories about the cabin too we didn't get into.
Well, let's do a part two in a couple weeks.
And
there's good stories about the woods that I can relate to.
Okay, let's, because we really did focus more on the house. So in about two more weeks, let's circle back and do another one.
Sounds wonderful.
That would be awesome. I'd like that a lot.
Sounds amazing. Perfect. Thank you so much for asking us to be on. It's been fun.
Well, we'll do it again in 2 weeks. And that wraps up our conversation about the cabin on 360 with Dennis Estlock and Ryan Jones. For more information, just search The Cabin on 360 on Facebook. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes without the commercials, then become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or you could go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.